Today is December 18th, 2013, and this is episode number 235 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, a concatenated sequence of hapless incidents. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit... Where do I come up with this stuff? You can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you would like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note. We love hearing from you. Shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
I don't think that title is going to fit on your business card, so we might have to just change it to Bag of Random Cats.
Man. Concatenated sequence of hapless incidents.
I'm pretty sure that's the story of my life.
It's probably the story of everyone's life.
Yeah, but for us, it happens with flair.
There's a song in there somewhere too. You know, Greg King could have used that instead of He could have said, you know, we broke up something something about an hour ago, concatenated a sequence of hapless events, right? Right?
That's so much more catchy than
It's ridiculous. Who let us do this?
I don't know.
Who let us do this?
People should know better than to let me sing on the show.
Yeah, well, me too.
Yeah.
So, speaking
of singing, what should we talk about?
Let's talk about... I don't know. We have some titles here somewhere. What do we have here? We have... I don't know. Where do you want to start?
Do you want to talk about the whole executive meetings with the president?
Let's talk about that.
All right.
So a bunch of Silicon Valley suits, which is kind of, you know, stretching that a little bit.
That's my Queen cover band name.
All right. Why is that your Queen cover band name?
I have no idea. I'm just picturing all these people wearing suits
made of silicone or silicone. That's the case.
Hanging out down in Silicon Valley, and they're using the most high tech instruments they can. And they're going, "We are the champions."
All right, I'm just gonna let you know. I'm just gonna edit that out.
That's probably for the best.
No one's gonna know about that one.
That's for the best. No, thank you.
Anyway, a bunch of Silicon Valley suits.
I've just ruined that for you forever, haven't I?
Yes. Bunch of Silicon Valley suits.
Get on your bikes and ride.
Met with the White House, including President Obama and Vice President Joe Biden. Now, the story ahead of time was that the White House was trying to spin the meeting as being about ways for the president to get input from business leaders on how to make the Affordable Care Act implementation better, how to improve the Obamacare website better, make it better. And tech execs were saying, nuh-uh, we're going to be talking about the NSA.
So guess what they talked about?
Well, we don't know. But I'm guessing the NSA.
I'm guessing the
NSA. So, like, ahead of time, The Guardian, you know, the Guardian has been at the forefront of publishing stories, both the leaks and the stories about the leaks that Edward Snowden has revealed about the U.S.'s massive surveillance system, not only of the world, but of our own citizens, too. And... Right. They talked to executives at these companies. One of them said, that's not going to happen. We're there to talk about the NSA. Another one said, there's only one subject that people really want to discuss right now. And so I'm guessing they did end up talking about that. But it was a 2.5-hour meeting.
I just have this image in my head of all these executives walking in and looking at the president and saying, "We came here to chew bubblegum and talk about the NSA. We're fresh out of bubblegum."
The president said that?
No, the executives talking Tim to Cook, the president you, said
Tim
that.
Tim Cook said that?
Don't ruin my jokes. They're all I've got.
All right.
We are the champions. So I need to get out more often, don't I?
Well, maybe. But that's really sad because I get out a lot less than you do.
That is really
sad. Let's move along before our listeners
before
start
we
crying.
Cry.
Yeah, before everyone starts crying. So the there was a video released by CBS of the early minutes of the meeting where President Obama was joking with Reed Hastings, the CEO of Netflix, about House of Cards. And then we got a picture from that. And one of the things that I thought was really interesting is, so these meetings, any kind of meeting involving the White House or involving any kind of diplomatic meeting dealing with other countries, et cetera, you know, all these things are extraordinarily closely choreographed, arranged, micromanaged.
Yep, posturing is a huge part of events like this.
Who sits next to whom and across from whom, all that sort of stuff. These things are all, they're not left to chance. And one of the very first things I notice is that it's Tim Cook and Google, that's Apple CEO Tim Cook, and Google chairman Eric Schmidt they're the ones in the middle, sitting across from President Obama.
Yes, and you even caught that Tim Cook is positioned so that he's directly between the president and the vice president.
Yeah, I think, yeah, so neither one is sitting directly across from President Obama. They're both sitting in between President Obama and the guy to his left and right. Mm-hmm. Right? So no one is placed as being the equal to President Obama because they're not facing him. And again, that's not done by chance. But Tim Cook and Eric Schmidt are clearly the two most important guys because they're the ones that are closest to President Obama sitting across from the table.
And considering Tim Cook is positioned so that he's equal between the president and vice president, I would assume that means he's seen as, of the two, the more important.
That was my take on it. Yeah. That was my take. My question is, who's the guy who's on the other side of President Obama?
Oh, yeah, Senator Red Tie.
Senator Red Tie?
Yeah.
What state does he represent?
Oh, he's from North Carolina.
We have a link to the story in the show notes. You can see the screenshot I grabbed with my callouts. That guy's he's got to be a politician. Red Tie is it says politician to you, doesn't it?
Oh yeah, I mean look at the way his suit fits. Look at the way his tie sits on his chest. These are the things that I look at when mm-hmm. when I'm looking at
yeah, you know,
people.
It's really too bad that politicians aren't allowed to look awesome.
Yeah, you would think, considering how much money they generally have access to, that they could get a tailor.
Well, and they can. And the thing is, the tailor's job, they do. And the tailor's job is to make them look put together without looking too good. You know, you can't look too good as a politician in the United States. If you look too good,
is that like saying
someone thinks you're up to
something?
You can't
put too much water in the nuclear reactor?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Yeah. Holy left field, Batman. Yeah, anyway, nonetheless, that guy's a politician. I don't know who it is. Now, it's interesting. Marissa Meyer is on. There must be a lot of executives at this meeting. Well, I just don't know how big the table is, but Marissa Meyer is not sitting across from the White House people. She's sitting on the same side. Stevenson, what's his name? What's the AT&T guy's name?
Ralph Stevenson.
Is that right? No, can't be. Doesn't ring a bell. Seems so close, though.
That's kind of funny because Randall I typed Stevenson. These names. Randall Stevenson. See, I started with an R.
You were very close.
I had the raw sound.
He's there somewhere. I don't know who the woman is. I know that there are some lower-level execs from Twitter, Microsoft, Facebook, and Comcast. So I'm
guessing. Wouldn't it be interesting if...
Oh, I bet that's a Comcast guy. I bet Senator Red Tie is actually a Comcast guy.
Well, that could be. I was just thinking, wouldn't it be interesting if when you're in Congress, the ties were organized in the same way as Starfleet uniforms? So red ties are the ones that when they head down to the cafeteria, they get killed.
Well, it would be interesting. I don't know if that would be good.
It probably depends on which political party you favor. So
I think that makes Marissa Meyer our science officer.
I believe you're right, yes.
She has a blue dress on. Yeah, so anyway, the other businesses, have we talked about this on our show before? Have we talked too much about the surveillance programs and businesses?
We haven't talked that much about it.
We both talked about it elsewhere.
Yeah, but we haven't talked about it a whole lot here. It's come up occasionally, but not on the scale as some other things we discuss.
My point is that, you know, oftentimes business interests are not aligned with our interests as consumers. As people, as citizens. What am I saying? Consumers, good Lord. As citizens. Matter of fact, I would say very often business interests are not aligned with the interests of citizens. And in the surveillance business, we have a rare moment where what I think is good for citizens, which is to have the government not surveilling us without a warrant, mm-hmm. and to not surveil us without probable cause. Right, I happen to think that that's a very good thing for citizens.
I agree.
But that is very much in line with what is good for our business, because the tech giants don't want to be seen to be in bed with the U.S. government in supplying our information to the U.S. government, because not only will U.S. customers not want to trust them, but no one outside the U.S. will want to trust them.
Right. And in some cases, people outside the United States will be blocked from using their services.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it chases development money. It chases customer money. It chases a lot of investment money. It chases a lot of things to companies that are doing business outside the U.S. And we don't want that. No one wants that. Well, no one in the U.S. wants that. It's not a good thing. And this is all because the NSA has mistaken its ability to collect information for the need and right to do so. And it's got to stop. And fortunately for us, the largest technology company, most of the largest technology companies want it to stop, and they want the U.S. to be a lot more transparent about what's being done.
I'm up for that transparency.
Yeah. And that's what this meeting was about. These guys and women are these people are pushing the White House to make some changes here. And as bad as it is, it's reality. They've got a bigger voice than we do.
And this is one of those times where I'm okay with them having a bigger voice, because they can use that to my benefit.
Yeah, fair enough. I quibble, actually. I'm not okay with them having the bigger voice, but I'm glad at least in this case it doesn't hurt us. As long as,
okay, fair enough.
As long as someone is speaking and someone is listening, that is a good thing. And you know, of course, you know, that said, Randall Stephenson's there, and AT&T was one of the companies that gave the U.S. Access to, you know, direct access to all the backbones.
Yeah, that was really nice of them.
Yeah, well, so did Verizon. I mean, you know, all the telecoms rolled over after 9/11 on this stuff. So, you know, I'm not too keen on AT&T's voice being at this table. But when it comes to Google, when it comes to Microsoft, when it comes to Apple, when it comes to Yahoo, when it comes to Twitter, their interests are in line with our interests, and that's a good thing. And I'm glad that this meeting took place, and I hope that some progress was made. Now, there was a single line statement that the companies jointly issued afterwards, and that was, do you have that in front of you?
I do not.
We appreciated the opportunity to share directly with the president our principles on government surveillance that were released last week, and we urge him to move aggressively on reform. Now, that's referring to the letter that you covered.
Yes. Okay, yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember those principles?
See, here's the problem with me trying to manage too much from one computer, because I'm still waiting for the article to come up so that I could act like I'm still up to speed.
Well, I've got the quote that you pulled from that letter.
Okay, good.
We understand that governments have a duty to protect their citizens, but this summer's revelations highlighted the urgent need to reform government surveillance practices worldwide. The balance in many countries has tipped too far in favor of the state and away from the rights of the individual, rights that are enshrined in our Constitution. This undermines the freedoms we all cherish. It's time for a change.
That's right. Slow clap. And what I like is that we're actually getting statements like this from big businesses, from corporations, because, as you said earlier, what they're saying is echoing what the average consumer needs.
Yeah, let's make no mistake about it. It's not that they may be standing up on principle, right? It's possible that they're standing up on principle, but the reality is that they're standing up for what's good for their own eventual bottom line.
Right. And yeah, you're absolutely right. Now, that said, in this case, what's good for their bottom line also happens to be good for us.
Yeah.
So it is a very welcome coincidence that our needs are in alignment with corporate needs.
Right.
Yeah. If it was voters acting to make change, change can still happen. But with corporations pushing for change, it can happen a lot faster.
It can. Hopefully it will. We'll have to see.
I hope so too. My fear is that we will get a superficial set of changes. So it appears as if we have reform, but then we'll have agencies behind the scenes continuing to do what they have been doing, and it just won't be as obvious to the public.
Yeah, that's probably going to be the case, man.
Which is unfortunate. The big problem is once you get, once a government gets a certain level of power, getting the government to relinquish that is nearly impossible.
Yeah, it's seldom happened. I mean, just the same thing with corporation. Once a corporation has a certain ability to do something, they're not going to give that up. And individuals aren't going to give that up either. I mean, it's, you know, there are no easy answers here. And the reality is that the fight against terrorism and criminal activity around the world is just astronomically complex. And
oh yes,
and you know, never more so than it is today with the internet. But I think as a country we have to get back to the notion of no unreasonable search and seizure, acting on probable cause, acting with warrants that are not, you know, issued by puppet courts like they are right now.
That would be awesome.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess our readers know where we stand on that issue.
That's right. We stand on the same side of the issue. Who is Senator Red Tie?
Exactly. All right. Thank you kindly, Sierra. He letting us know that it's rapid fire time. Our poorly named rapid fire segment.
Well, you know, when saliva and aerosol decided that we should start this, they really did have good intentions.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure they did. So let's see. How about the Mac Pro? The Mac Pro is going to be shipping tomorrow.
Yes.
And tomorrow, so we're recording this on Wednesday. It'll be published on Wednesday. A lot of people probably won't hear it until Thursday at the earliest.
Right. So, but that's okay because wibbly wobbly timey wimey.
Yep.
So, yeah. So that means that on December 19th, you'll be able to start buying the completely redesigned Mac Pro. Base price is $2,999. And that will be for a quad core processor running at 3.7 gigahertz.
No. No,
I'm totally pulling that off the top of my head.
I am looking it up. I don't think that we are that fast. Oh, gosh, you're so right. Quad core, 3.7 gigahertz. Core Intel Xeon E5. And then there's the 3.5 gigahertz 6-core Intel Xeon E5 for $39.99.
Right, and both can do what Apple's calling Turbo Boost, up to 3.9 gigahertz, I believe.
Something like that, yep. And they've got the dual AMD.
Hey, after I totally nailed the 3.5 and 3.7 gigahertz, you shouldn't be saying something like that. You should just go, yep.
Yep.
There you go.
Yep. Boy, you nailed that one. 12 gigs of RAM on the entry-level one, 16 gigs of RAM on the bigger one. Those dual video cards, these things are sweet. And if anybody needs my mailing address so they can send me one for Christmas, I will send it to you. Shoot me a note at acm@macobserver.com.
I think that you will be awash in Mac Pros.
No doubt. I will be awash with them.
Yeah, you'll have so many that you'll just set them on the floor and put glass sheets on top of them and make coffee tables.
Yay! Fastest coffee tables on the planet.
That's right.
Anyway, those ship tomorrow. It's very exciting, very cool. Very cool. I don't know if I have a lot to say about it, though. Do you have anything to say about it?
Yes. Not a lot, though. What I am hoping is that this computer is so much faster than anything Apple has ever made, like magnitudes of order faster. Otherwise, I fear that there will be a lot of media coverage about how Apple waited years and years before releasing a new version of the Mac Pro, and all they did was change the case, and they're overcharging people for looks.
And you can't add Ethernet cards.
Yeah, you can't add Ethernet cards.
Well, it's gonna, you know, it is going to be faster than anything that Apple's done for scientific stuff that can tap those GPUs, and for any kind of professional video processing and the, you know, effects processing and whatnot. The presence of the two GPUs, in addition to that thing powering 4K displays, it has a lot of processing power on it.
Yeah, and to be clear, when you say 4K displays, up to four 4K displays.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah, it's just crazy.
Up to six Thunderbolt displays.
Yeah. Also crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, just the notion of being able to run four 4K displays simultaneously.
Yeah, which would be fantastic. But Even if you're not running, you know, if you just got the old crappy Thunderbolt display, I'm joking there with about it being crappy. There is software that will take advantage of those GPUs. So, you know, this thing is going to be fast. It's going to be fast at the very least at some things.
It should be. I mean, it has super fast SSD storage.
Yep.
And super fast RAM.
Yep. And a lot of
And then quad core, 6 core, or a build to order 8 core option.
There's a 12 core option too.
12 core option too. Wow. Yeah, see, so this is insane.
4, 6, 8, and 12.
And yeah, and so with the hardware that Apple has thrown into this thing, I'm thinking this is just going to be a crazy fast machine.
Should be. Can't wait to see some benchmarks. It's exciting.
It is exciting.
It's exciting. Thank kindly, Sierra.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, just so everyone knows, that $3,000 base price, mm-hmm. there's no keyboard or mouse included. In the box, you have a computer and a power cord.
Really?
Yep, that's it.
Nope. No keyboard?
No keyboard or mouse.
Come on, are you serious?
Yep.
No.
Yep. Doesn't seem like such a screaming deal now, does it?
Well, no, it just seems bizarre. Why do that? I mean...
That's a really good question.
And where did you hear that? This is clearly news to me, by the way.
I read it on Apple's webpage when I looked at if you scroll down to the bottom of the Mac Pro page on Apple's website, it tells you what's in the packaging for each computer you're buying.
Box, Mac Pro, power cord, keyboard, and mouse sold separately. Oh my God! Is that so that they could have the small box?
That's my guess.
Oh, that's so stupid.
Yeah, my guess is that it's about the packaging.
Okay, I'm just going to go on Super Mega Monkey Tilt.
Okay, well, and let me point out another thing. Apple does not make a keyboard or mouse that match the Mac Pro.
That is true.
So, yeah, you get on with your Mega Monkey
Mad Mega Monkey
Tilt self. Because I think it's really stupid that a pro-level computer like this doesn't even have a keyboard or mouse.
Yeah. Because, you know, you're going to sell your previous Mac Pro.
And now you're going to have to go out and buy a keyboard and trackpad or whatever so that you can use your new computer.
Yeah. Ooh, I lied. It only goes up to 8 cores.
Oh, okay.
I thought it went up to 12 cores. I'm apparently wrong. It goes up to 8 cores.
Yeah, well, you also thought that I was wrong on the base model.
That's true. Strike two for me.
Man. What's wrong with you, Brian?
Oh, no. Fine. Let's move. Move on there. Sierra's right.
Yeah, Sierra did not look happy because he moved us on from that rapid fire topic, and I did not go.
No. Beatles and Beyonce. These times, they are a changing. We'll throw in some Dylan.
That was nice.
Thank you.
That very well done.
Thank you. Thank you. Finally, someone recognizes my genius. So Beyonce, actually, Apple announced. This week on Monday, I think it was. Was that Monday or Tuesday?
Let's see. Today is Wednesday, so that would have been on Tuesday.
Earlier this week, Apple announced that Beyonce sold 828,773, I think it is, copies of her new album called Beyonce. And except the album is all caps for some reason, but whatever.
It looks better going around the logo.
That must be it.
I don't know.
And so this was an iTunes exclusive album for the release. You know, this is something that's been going on with a lot of music retailers, the big retailers, i.e. in particular Walmart and Apple, where an album will initially be available in only one of those places as a promotion.
Mm-hmm.
And Apple got the release deal for Beyonce's album, and they sold 828,000 copies in the first 3 days, making it the hottest-selling album on the iTunes store of all time, and then also Beyonce's biggest selling album.
And that's with 3 days of sales only on the iTunes store.
Yes.
Yeah. And then follow that up with the Beatles are releasing, or more accurately, AppleCore is releasing 59 tracks that were previously unreleased from the Beatles. And so it's like live performance from BBC events and so
alternate takes.
And, yeah, alternate takes from studio recordings. And so all of this is being released exclusively on iTunes.
Yeah, as a copyright extension maneuver.
Yes. Yes. But the fact that it's being released only on iTunes is, I find it interesting on a couple levels. First, of all of the places that you can release an exclusive album, if you're going with iTunes, it just backs up the idea that Apple has really taken a solid place in the music industry.
Yeah, we're seeing the proof of the sea change in the music world. I mean, for Beyonce selling through iTunes only to be able to surpass her previous four albums, which included releases on iTunes and at Walmart and on Amazon and everywhere else under the sun, that is a pretty significant achievement for Apple.
Yes. Yes, it is. Now, the other aspect that I find to be just deliciously wonderful about this is that AppleCore chose to do the exclusive release through the iTunes store. Historically, AppleCore fought with Apple.
That's true.
Over Apple's involvement in the music industry.
It's true, yeah. And Apple Incorporated, the computer company, had to pay handsomely to put all that behind them.
Yes.
More than one time.
Yes. Yeah, they did. Going back all the way to the Apple II GS.
Yes. Because it made music.
Because it made music, that's right. And it did it really well, too. I was really impressed. But there you go. Now, this organization that vehemently fought with Apple Inc. or Apple Computer over music went to their former rival for the exclusive launch of this new album.
Now, it's interesting also because as I understand it, some side reading I was doing on this, it's not like AppleCore wanted to release this album. This isn't an album being released so that the Beatles can make some more money. This is an album being released to extend copyrights because it is known that these versions exist. They're out there in bootlegs, but they remain bootlegs. If AppleCore didn't release those songs that are known to be out there, the copyrights would have expired because there was a 50-year copyright from the date of release.
Well, yeah, so actually what's happening here, and this is based on EU law, so they have a 50-year copyright from when they were recorded that will be extended to 70 years once they're actually released. So that takes the copyrights on these from expiring in 2013 to expiring in 2033.
Okay, got much better explanation than my erroneous one. But my point was that when Sony did something similar with this, I think it was some Dylan stuff, don't hold me to that. They released it in a limited edition LP with 100 copies.
Which was plenty to
extend the copyright.
Yes.
But they didn't necessarily want the material to be out there. Right? They didn't,
which is so
they
weird,
didn't want it to be widely. Okay. So, you know, it's interesting that the Beatles have chosen a format that will actually generate some income.
I think that they'll pull it after a little while. So it'll be available on iTunes for a short window of time. Then it'll be gone. And at some future date, they're going to re-release this content in different formats. Like maybe they'll do some special box set thing. And they're buying themselves time to do whatever it is that they really want to do with these recordings.
Right.
Now, since the Beatles recorded over several years, my guess is that next year around this time, we'll see another bootleg album come out that will have all their stuff from 1964 that they want to protect.
Yes, for sure. That's definitely coming.
Yeah. So this is something that we can look forward to for the next couple of years.
Yeah. Yay.
Yay.
Actually, you know, the funny thing is that most of this material, all of this material is stuff that bootleggers already have.
So I hear.
Yeah, and there's still all kinds of stuff that is known to exist but is not in the wild, or at least some of it's thought to exist.
It's not officially in the wild, but it's in the wild.
And there's some things that aren't in the wild. Like there's a 52-minute version, I think, or a 12-minute version of Helter Skelter. There's a song that the Beatles recorded that was never released, and like no one has a copy and everybody wants one. So, I don't know. It's a true bootleg. Beatles nuts aren't really getting any new material, although the recordings themselves may be of better quality since they're, in theory, coming from something closer to the original.
Yeah, although a lot of the really esoteric bootlegs came from the original recordings. And so if you know where to look and if you know the right people to ask, you can get some fantastic quality bootleg stuff. Or so I hear.
So I've actually heard. I've known some bootleggers in my day. So we have a good sponsor again, Sanebox.
That's right, Sanebox. They're the guys that let us do triage on our email.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a triage. So like when your mail's coming in, it allows very quick, boy, as I die here, very quick actions that you can perform that allow you to quickly sort and manage and maintain your email very easily.
Even better. It learns how or what matters to you in your inbox.
Yeah.
So it can get more effective over time at showing you just what it is that you need to see.
Right. Which is very, very, very handy. And it actually looks at things like, what you open, what you respond to, how long you have stuff open. It's pretty cool.
It is cool. And you can tell it that certain messages you need to come back to later, so it can make them show up for you later.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool.
That is very cool. And, it works everywhere on any email provider. You'll simply see that your folder exists everywhere that you check your mail.
Right. Right. So it doesn't matter what email client you're using. This kind of works in the background, and you'll end up having the same triage services regardless of whether or not you're on your Mac, you're on a PC at work, if you're on your iPhone or iPad. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, totally. And it's got, one thing, I don't think we've even mentioned this before. It has a one-click unsubscriber.
Oh, that's sweet.
You can move your attachments to Dropbox.
See, that's really
nice. You could, of course, do that by hand.
But why not let the magic of technology do it for you?
Exactly. That's really cool. And best of all, because you're trying them out through us, you can get a $10 credit by going to sanebox.com/ACM. Yeah, a little handy mnemonic for you. That stands for Apple Context Machine.
Oh, that's very clever. ACM. Apple Context Machine.
Get a $10 credit.
That's really nice.
Yeah, that's really nice. Listen, these guys, if you struggle with your email, you should check out Sandbox.
Yes.
I mean, that's just a fact. It's a they've got a great technology that they're doing. It's a really good way of you know, it's a good way of thinking about email.
You know, we need to take it a little bit farther than saying if you struggle with your email. If you want to be more efficient with your email, and even if you think you already are efficient, you can streamline that even more with Sanebox.
Yeah. Yeah. Good stuff. We're glad to have
Indeed.
Them. We're glad to have them.
Yes.
Thank you. We've got Samsung proving once again that it is not out to copy Apple by hiring an Apple Store designer to work on their retail.
To be fair, former Apple Store designer.
True. He left in November. To me, it seems highly likely that he left to go to Samsung as opposed to left and was snapped up by Samsung.
I think that's very possible.
We don't know.
But now, of course, if you ask Samsung, they'll say something like, well, what we did was we looked in a bowl of water and we got the inspiration for this from... Yeah.
And that, of course, would have been Jeff Gamet doing Adam Savage doing Jamie Hyneman.
If this was a video podcast, you could have seen my Cthulhu hand over my mouth.
So, I mean, you know, I've written, maybe I just like won't let anyone have it anyway, but I've written articles complaining about other companies having Apple's blueprint and still not doing it right. And Samsung would probably actually qualify that, but Samsung is at least trying to copy every single thing that Apple does. And
they are, you're right.
But they deny it. And you know, this sort of ties into our next main topic, but and at the same time people call them innovative. I mean, just like they're just so desperate. They're so pathetically desperate to be Apple or to be perceived as being as good as Apple.
Well, Brian, to be fair, they released a digital watch before Apple.
Well, that's true, but of course they actually did that back in the 90s.
See? And they came up with a curved glass smartphone before Apple.
Well, they certainly released one before Apple. We don't
see.
You know. And they had gold phones before Apple.
Oh, well, there you go. Apple's such a poser company.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know. Guys are just, like I said, they're desperate to be. Yeah. Do you remember the what we saw? Because if I remember correctly, you were with me when we first went by the Samsung booth.
Oh, last year?
Yeah,
at CES. Yeah.
And
it was a weird booth.
And it was huge. And it was packed full of people. Packed full of people. And none of those people were interacting with the Samsung smartphones and tablets that were on display.
No, everyone that was in the booth looked dejected and as if they were put upon for simply being there. And that also included the Samsung staff.
Yeah, no, well, of course it is CES.
Yeah, but it was also the first day.
Yeah, that's true. It was the first day.
And most booths on the first day, people can at least feign pleasure. By the time, okay, so that would have been on a Tuesday. By the time you get to Friday, people don't even go through the motions of trying to hide the fact that they're crying.
It's true. So totally true. And so, you know, we're standing outside that booth. And it's just packed, and yet, you know, you walk in, or at least, so I ended up walking in because kind of wanted to see what was going on. I wanted to see what was going on, And I was just shocked to see that despite all the people milling around, there was no one handling all these phablets. There was no one handling all these tablets, and there was no one handling all the smaller smartphones. I mean, it was weird.
What, from my perspective, because I stayed outside the booth, was that you walked into a sea of disdain. It was interesting. You were the most engaging person in that booth. And it's because you were actually actively looking around, taking in what was happening there. Because you weren't interested in the products that were there. You're interested in the interaction that other people were having in the booth. And since everyone else is basically standing there like, well, I guess I got another 2 hours before I go wait in line for a hot dog.
Yeah. But, and it's interesting. Yeah. My thought was that I was walking in to take some pictures to do a story about how busy the booth was, because we were both blown away by how many people were in there.
Oh yeah, it was packed.
Like, whoa, wow! I guess they're doing something right. And then it turns out that apparently they weren't doing anything right. And you see this, it's like walking by a Microsoft store, right? There's people playing video games, but no one's messing with all the computers. And
yeah, that's a good point.
And you walk by an Apple store, and of course,
good luck getting in because it's so full.
People are two and three deep waiting to look and handle and interact with the products. And Samsung can hire all of the Apple employees that it can get its hands on, and it's not going to change anything. That's my prediction. That Samsung stores within a store at Best Buy, let alone any kind of standalone stores that I'm imagining they're planning.
Of course they are. I mean, based on the people they're hiring, of course they went to have their own stores.
Yeah, I think so.
But it's like saying you can go and buy the best ingredients in the world. It doesn't mean you can make a really good tasting cake.
That's right. That's right. That's right. So we'll have to see. Have to see what happens with that. All right. Thanks for that ding. We have
Oh, we're still doing rapid fire? Well,
yeah, that was supposed to be rapid fire.
Oh, all right.
So speaking of companies bagging on Apple. What was it?
Beyonce. No, wait. Wrong topic. Wrong. Okay. Sorry.
We had that thing where Dan Lyons talked to some Qualcomm folks at the same company, of course, that initially dismissed the Apple's A7 processor as a marketing gimmick, saying that the whole thing was like a hit to the gut. At one point, they said it was a kick to the nether regions, except for they actually used the more common euphemism. Spoiler, family-friendly rating.
To the pecans.
There we go. So kick to the pecans. And I find this really interesting.
I find it very interesting too, and I find it interesting because we have Apple, the computer maker, the iPhone maker, the iPad maker. And they out-chipped the chip makers.
Yes. And, of course, we all know that Apple can't innovate. That all Apple does is copy everyone.
Right. I mean, look at all the stuff that Apple does that's like Samsung.
Right. Samsung, the company that actually makes Apple's processors. And it's so The interesting bits about this are, first of all, is the notion that these companies known for making great chips. Qualcomm is known for making great chips.
Mm-hmm.
Samsung is known for making chips. I don't know if they're known for making great chips, but they're known for making chips, certainly.
They're known for making quality chips.
Quality chips, there we go. Yeah, they have a quality fab. And they were all caught off guard by Apple introducing a 64-bit mobile processor to the market. Caught completely flat-footed.
Okay, and that's the other thing I find fascinating. In the whole tech industry, with everything that's involved in designing and fabricating chips like this, no one saw it coming.
Yeah. Because you know that if Samsung... So you and I were talking a little bit before the program started about how Apple has has agreements with Samsung. It's believed that Apple has agreements with Samsung that require Samsung to compartmentalize what it's doing for Apple and not share that information with the rest of Samsung.
And it looks like they actually did what they were supposed to.
Yeah, I have no doubt that if the rest of Samsung had known that Apple was about to introduce a 64-bit iPhone 5S, that they would have pre-announced a 64-bit processor 2 weeks before Apple's media event.
Sure. Yeah, that's totally Samsung's MO.
Totally Samsung's MO. Totally Samsung. They've done this sort of thing repeatedly, especially when they're trying to, keep up with Apple and delude themselves that they matter.
I think it's more about deluding the public that they matter.
I think it's about...
Okay, that's not fair, because they do matter, because they make a lot of products, and they make they make components for a lot of products that people really want.
But their delusion is that those products matter, and those products don't. An HTC or an LG or even an Nokia... Of course, Nokia is not going to be making Android devices, but... Samsung's Android devices are merely flavors of Android devices. They don't matter. And everything that Samsung does that's original to its Android devices are largely seen as a nuisance or something that gets in the way of the Android experience. And, this is the whole thing that I've been going on about forever, about Android having delusions of relevance.
I understand why you're caught without words, which for you is a big thing. And it's because here we have this company that on one hand is projecting irrelevance, yet on the other hand is a very important player in the whole consumer electronics market. And I just find it fascinating that you can have a company that can be bipolar like that. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what Samsung is. They do make some good things, and they do make quality components for other companies. And yet, they roll out just some garbage products at the same time.
Well, they don't have any taste. It's kind of like Microsoft. They don't have any taste. They don't have any vision. They certainly don't have a vision.
That's true. So last year at their keynote presentation at CES. Their big announcement was an internet-connected refrigerator. Mm. And my thought was, really? That's what you came to Vegas for, to talk about an internet refrigerator. And they talk a lot about stuff that isn't shipping and probably never will. To be fair, there's a lot that happens at CES that will never make it to showroom floors.
Yeah, and there's a lot of it that happens at CES that's not aimed at consumers. That's not aimed at consumers finding out about products. There's a lot of, CES, a huge portion of CES is about retail deals, distribution deals. Fudding the other guys before they to kill their sales while they're still while company A wants to fud what company B is doing while company A finishes what company A wants to do that's going to compete with company B.
Right,
that sort of thing.
That was like a really tough word problem.
Yeah, it wasn't my most eloquent comment ever. But
I don't get Samsung. And I also, you know, Qualcomm, so it was their marketing guy, their marketing VP, their former marketing VP now, who, after Apple announced the A7, he said, this is nothing but a marketing gimmick. He was reassigned, i.e. demoted. And
yeah.
And but the reality is that Apple really has set the bar with mobile processors. And when you consider the fact that chip making is not, you know, chip making is essentially a very important side project for Apple. You know, it's a piece of the pie. It's not the pie. And they're beating folks for whom it's the pie. And that's fascinating.
Yes. Yes. And beating them quite soundly.
Quite soundly, yeah. Yeah, Apple has a huge head start here with the 64-bit business, which means that developers have a huge head start with the 64-bit business. And you know, and we're seeing that the iPhone 5S is extremely fast, even for apps that aren't built specifically to take advantage of that 64-bit processor. And we know that we're just still in the early days of this.
We are. And yes, it's fast. I love the iPhone 5S. Yeah.
I do too. You know, all from a company that the outside world loves to say, you know, can innovate or doesn't innovate or just copies or just releases stuff that other people are already doing and, you know, all this nonsense. And, you know, the reality is that Apple just keeps kicking butt.
They do. They're releasing quality products. And yes, I know there's people out there that don't believe that, but they're releasing quality products and they have a whole ecosystem that is working really well, not only for developers, but also for customers. And yes, I know there's people that will disagree with that.
Probably not listening to us, though.
Probably not. But still, yeah, Apple is doing a really good job of providing an all-around good package for product developers, for app developers, and for consumers.
Yeah.
And that's not something Samsung can say about their mobile device products.
Nope. Fun times.
Yes, indeed.
Fun times. I think we have a show.
How did we manage to pull it off yet again?
I don't know. You know what? We're going to have to record a show. We're not going to have this glass wall between us because we're going to be in Vegas.
I know. That's going to be pretty wild. Yeah. The part that concerns me is trying to keep Sienna and Ashley under control.
Yes.
So I'm not sure. Do we need leashes, or does that change the demographic for our audience? No,
we'll just leave them chained up at home.
Oh, that's brilliant. Oh, and since we won't be there, we don't have to feed them. We're going to save money.
Exactly. Exactly. Oh, like you don't like it. Be quiet over there. All right. Why don't you take us out?
Oh, my. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. Thanks for listening. Feel free to follow me on Twitter and app.net. I'm Jay Gamm at both places. And point iTunes right over to the iTunes store. Oh, just roll with it. Just go over to iTunes and rate our show because we do.
Yeah. And you can follow me over on Twitter at the TM O'Brien. That's Brian with a Y. I am at
the TM O'Brien.
At the TM O'Brien. Actually, there's no the. At TM O'Brien.
I am at geektales.com for my personal blog. Jeff is at Fresh Brewed Tales. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for us. And that's all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.
We are the champions.